See, you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
You should have just played catch.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Henry Ford College in Dearborn, Michigan is a comprehensive public college serving about 18,000 students each year in Southeast Michigan. HFC is dedicated to preparing students for the rapidly changing workplace in today's world by offering more than 100 associate degree and university transfer programs. HFC also specializes in customized workforce development training for business and industry. Since its founding in 1938, HFC has been the gateway to higher education for thousands of students who seek an affordable, high-quality post-secondary education. To learn more about what HFC has to offer, please visit us at www.hfcc.edu or you can call the campus office at 1-800-585-HFCC. Your future begins now, and it begins right here at Henry Ford College.
If you're a loyalist.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our Tuesday Forum. And this week, the fifth Tuesday of every month, which happens every couple of months, it is our Dearborn Heights News and Views for March 31st, 2015, coming right up. We're here in the studio today for Dearborn Heights News and Views. And the program is hosted by Ned Apigian, who is also a Dearborn Heights City Council person. Again, this show is presented on fifth Tuesday of whatever month has a fifth Tuesday on WHFR Dearborn. Hey, you know, we're making waves on 89.3 FM. This is a program devoted entirely to the issues of interest to the residents of the city of Dearborn Heights, which probably applies to some other people living nearby too, of course, but this is going to be about how Dearborn Heights plays the game. This program is part of the WHFR weekly talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m., different topics each Tuesday. So check our website, whfr.fm, for more information on that. And now your host of the show to introduce our special guest, our Dearborn Heights City Council person, Ned Apigian.
Thank you, Jay, and our guest today is our young and energetic city appraiser in the city of Dearborn Heights. His name is Justin Prabilski.
How are you doing, Ned?
Thank you for coming, Justin, and I hope our listeners have a piece of paper and pencil, because I'm sure you're going to depart a lot of information they may find interesting. At least they're going to find out what it is that we do and how they get assessed what they are. But first, let's find out something about you, your background, where you came from, where you're born. And then after you do that, tell us something about your background and training as to become the appraiser you are and hopefully eventually our assessor.
I was born in Dearborn, Michigan, and eventually grew up in Wyandotte. I attended a couple different high schools before I went to a technical academy out of Romulus. Got my diploma from Romulus, graduated in 2004. Then had went on doing several different jobs, decided to go back to school, and went to college at Henry Ford University. Was going to start working towards a degree in architecture. I graduated in January of 2012.
Oh,
and was going to move on. Was going to move on to a four-year college, but I took a co-op position at the City of Dearborn Heights in the assessor's office.
Oh, what's that all about? From there. What's a co-op position?
basically they were looking for students in related fields to help out with some of the assessment work. And after starting the position, decided to continue on and receive training through the state to become.
Yeah, I noticed that we use a lot of college students part-time. Mm-hmm. Is that only in the summer or throughout the year?
We use them throughout the year for many different things.
Okay, so tell us about this background you must have into appraising.
Well, after being offered a possible position, if I continued on with education, I went and applied to get into the State Tax Commission's certification program. It was the Michigan Certified Assessing Officer program. It's a two-year program. And it gives you a level two assessing license to oversee so much assessed and taxable value, property value.
And I assume the city paid for this course?
No, I paid that out of pocket for that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's in Lansing, you said?
The classes were held in Lansing, and they can be held in other various areas in Michigan.
Okay.
But it was all developed by the State Tax Commission, though.
Now, this education comes in different levels. There's level one, two, three, four. Can you explain that?
The state has been working on, as far as I know it, they've developed four levels again. The first one is a Michigan Certified Assessing Technician. You wouldn't be able to certify an assessment role or oversee any property value. Basically allows you to start a position in assessing. Then the second would be a Michigan Certified Assessing Officer, which is what I currently am.
How long is each one? Make sure you...
The Certified Assessing Technician, you just have to go take a course that's 2.5 days and a test. So then you would be able to start in an assessing position without overseeing any property value, though, or signing an assessment.
So that allows you to be able to take a job as...
Correct.
As a technician.
Correct.
How many technicians do we have in the city of Dearborn?
We don't have any Michigan certified assessing technicians. We have
you.
Everybody certified, though, as level two assessors.
Okay, you're saying you don't have any level ones.
At the time, there wasn't a level one when I took. I jumped right to the level two.
I see.
They've been reforming it over the last couple of years. Every year they'll come out. They'll change classes, they'll add classes, trying to make it a better program to educate.
What's the training for a level two?
The training for a level two, like I said, was a two-year course. It ended up being, I believe...
The first one was a two-day course.
Yeah, the first one's a two-and-a-half-day
course. Level two is 2 years. What do you do in that 2 years?
They have a whole curriculum. They teach you everything about assessing so that you would be prepared to certify an assessment role of so much property value. They go over all the curriculum, and you take a number of classes, anything from how to develop land value to ECFs and market adjustments.
Tell us what an ECF is. You have to be careful of your lingo. That doesn't mean anything to the rest of us.
No. an ECF, basically that class would teach you how to establish a market adjustment for the properties in a certain area based on what the sales are doing compared to the assessments. The assessment level is 50% in Michigan. So you would compare the assessed values with sale prices and be as close to that 50% as possible.
Okay, so it's an evaluation based on sales.
It's an evaluation of the market for a specific area that we develop. Homes built within a certain year. We go through and look at all the neighborhoods and areas in the city and see which ones are the most homogeneous and most similar to develop neighborhoods. And we can change those neighborhoods.
Hmm. Okay. What is three?
More uniform and accurate. What were you saying?
Level three.
Level three would be a Michigan Advanced Assessing Officer. It ends up being a two-year program. It can take up to 3 to 4 to 5 years to finish it. How they have it outlined now, you have to take 5 prerequisite courses, and then you have to take a one-year program.
So you said 3 years. So you're in the middle of three?
I was able to do the level three I will be able to do it in 2 years, which would be the least amount of time possibly that it could take.
And how, where are you in that process?
I am starting the level 3 program in 3 weeks.
Okay, so you haven't started the 3. You haven't started.
I've been accepted into the program.
Okay, so you have to be accepted into the
program? You have to take the 5 prereqs, pass the prerequisites, and then you have to take an entrance exam, pass the entrance exam. Everything you have to pass with a score of 75% or greater,
and so
then you have to apply to get into the program.
Okay, and the program is at least, it's going to be 2 years for you. Why 2 years for you and not 3?
I was able to take all 5 prereqs in 1 year.
I see. Mm-hmm. So so after this level 3, what does it consist of, this level 3? There has to be something different than level 2.
It's more specialized in specific areas of assessing how the state has outlined it.
Like what?
They specify, they basically take you into 4 areas of assessing, which are land valuation and economic condition factors. That would be the ECFs, developing land value, and then market adjustments for properties. Equalization and classification, would be whether or not the property is industrial use, commercial use, residential use, utility, personal property, and then data collection and property tax administration. So data collection would be what we do with all of our field work and getting all of the records for all the properties to develop an assessment of that property, going out and getting square footage, collecting all sorts of data, collecting sales data when there's an appeal process.
So it sounds like it's like a cooperative. It has to do with what you're doing at work.
It's exactly in line with that. It's more centralized and focused on... Mm-hmm. Right. It focuses on those 4 semesters, how the state... And this is all at the state's website. They have all the education programs laid out. So as I understand it,
so this is, could be areas. An internet course too?
No, it's not an internet course.
Okay. So okay, when you finish this in 2 years and you haven't begun it yet, okay, there's the level 4.
Then there's a level 4.
And how long does that take?
The level 4, you have to be a certified level 3 for a certain period of time.
How long?
Then the level 4...
6 months, approximately. You don't have to give me exactly.
I believe it's a few years.
Okay, a couple of years.
It's a couple of years that you have to maintain that advanced assessing officer level 3.
So how long is the process for the level 4?
That can take several years. You have to have a minimum of 2 years with the level 3. And then you're able to start the program, and it's another 4-semester program that's even more centralized.
The reason I'm asking you all these questions is so that the listeners, and not only them, but those of us here, get an idea of how sophisticated it is when a person calls, before a person can become the assessor, mm-hmm, have that title.
In my opinion, it's definitely more in-depth than I understood it to be before. Need a lot more education now. They've developed a lot more in-depth curriculum and criteria to become an assessing
officer.
So
how long will it be? I think you're the only one that's at your level in the process. Is that correct, in our office?
In our office specifically, there are 2 certified level 2s, and we have a certified assessor that is a level 3.
Our assessor is not a level 4?
The assessor for Dearborn Heights currently this year,
yes,
and previous years to this year, by the State Tax Commission's requirements, needs to be a level 3 assessor.
Okay. What's a level 4 assessor?
A level 4 assessor is the highest...
Do you have to be in a city that has industrial properties or what?
Every year the state will issue a... guideline, the certification requirements of an assessor, and that will tell you how much property value you can oversee. So it can change from year to year. And once you start getting into the higher property values, and the commercial industrial has to be of a certain percentage of that. So if the commercial and industrial value exceeds, I believe it's 20%,
then you have to have a level.
Then you have to move on to the next level,
which is a level four.
It could very well have, how they've outlined it, you could be a level three to certify it, but if the commercial and industrial value exceeds that percentage, then you would have to be a level four to sign the
So we keep talking about you becoming an assessor sometime in the future. That's a couple of years down the road.
It would be potentially a year down the road, but as a level two, you can sign an assessment role.
Yeah, but we're going to later define what an assessment role is.
Right.
I mean, it's important to, you because you live with it, but our listeners don't know. So presently, we have a part-time assessor.
We do have a certified.
We have a certified part-time assessor that works 2 days for her. Mm-hmm. Her name is Wendy Moya, and she's a part-time assessor for the city of Grosse Pointe.
Also.
She works 2 days there. We try to save money all the time, Jay. Do a good job.
Well, as long as you get the job done, you know, how long does it take?
Well, the process is they have to do something called certifying the role, which we're going to identify because it's now 15 after the hour and I do my usual station ID. But when we come back, you are going to identify the role, what it means. What's the importance of it? Mm-hmm. And you are listening to the Heights News and Views, a talk show program presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month, right here on 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this archive program on the internet on your computer by selecting whfr.fm to get to our station site. Select the talk show button and select today's date, which is March 31st, or any date of the fifth Tuesday of at the time of 1 to 2 p.m. And the show title will show the Heights News and Views, and hopefully you will suggest this to some of your friends that didn't have the advantage of listening to it today. Now, back to today's guest, one of our appraisers, Justin Prabilski. Justin, it's time for you to identify that much desired, the list, certifying the role.
Well, the state every year presents a list of every community in all the 83 counties and what the certification level requirements are. So you can find all that at michigan.gov/treasury and look up the State Tax Commission, and they have a lot of information there on how you can get certified and the education and the program summaries for all those. And then they do have published every year the required certification levels. So there are a lot of cities that do require, or townships, that you could be a level two. So as long as you're a level
two. We're past that now. What is the certification process? What does it mean?
The assessment role?
What does it do? Yeah. The certifying the assessment role. What is that role?
The assessment role we generate for taxation of all taxable property within the jurisdiction.
So what does she do to that assessment role?
We go out and we find all assessable real and personal property, and we assign a value to it.
And what does she sign? She signs saying the value that we've assessed to it is what we believe is
the
value. Exactly. And only she, in this case it's a she, can sign the role. You can't.
Only a person certified with the right level required can sign the role.
And right now, when we lost our full-time assessor, Barb, last year, we needed a certified person to
sign
the assessment role.
Somebody with the right level
of certification. What was the correct terminology of the roll, signing the...
The assessment roll.
The assessment roll. Mm-hmm. So...
Yep, we generate the values for all the property in the city, the assessed and taxable values.
Jay might want to make a mental note to find out what's going on in Dearborn.
Well, it sounds to me, first of all, if I may jump in, and thank you, Ned. Sure. I'm Jay Koronek, also host of the WHFR Journal every Friday. But that's Dearborn. It sounds to me, first of all, Justin, that it looks like the state sets, first of all, the criteria, basically, the taxation rules that you have to use for appraisal, right?
Correct. There used to be an assessor's board, but now the State Tax Commission assigns that.
Which basically does whatever the legislature and or the governor tells them? It's obviously legislation has passed, or is... This board was appointed by the legislature.
I believe they are appointed by the governor.
By the governor, yeah.
The members of the State Tax Commission.
So it's kind of a political process, but...
Yeah. But the point is, it must be standardized for all the communities.
Right, but then it sounds to me like, from what you said, is that each city gets to hire their own assessment team, one person or several, and you can make adjustments based on data that you've received about the kinds of houses, the kinds of property, all these different criteria. And there must be a lot, dozens of different criteria you look at in terms of assessing property value.
Definitely.
Right. And so each city, obviously, the local politics are, they would like you to rate all those properties, assess them as high as possible so they get more tax money, but fairly, of course, I'm saying here. And you're trying to look at all these different objective criteria in order to set those levels. But each city might do it somewhat differently depending on all those different criteria, right?
Well, they should be assessing the same. It's uniform in Michigan. You have the three values, and this is since Proposal A in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Proposal A established...
Yeah, define that for the people before we go into field and office work. Define how Proposal A affects this process.
Basically, the main things that Proposal A brought into place was the principal residence exemption, which exempted homeowners that occupy... Right. It used to be called the homestead. They have since changed it to the principal residence exemption.
Okay,
because it was being confused, I believe, with the homestead that you claim on your state tax return.
Hmm.
So it has been changed to principal residence exemption. It exempts you from a portion of school operating fees. So a person that owns and occupies their house would be paying lesser taxes.
Right. We went through a little mathematics. You said the formula about 18.
In Dearborn Heights. It can be a little bit different, but generally...
So if you have if you're assessed about $50,000 and you don't have the so-called homestead, you would be paying about $900 more in taxes. So there's a big difference.
Right, and when I speak, I'm speaking specifically about Dearborn Heights.
Right, by my case, I think I'm assessed around $50,000, $55,000.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I know what I pay. So I would be paying about a third more if I didn't have the homestead deduction. I think that people would like to know that.
Right.
Now, people that buy houses and rent them, they don't get that deduction. They have to pay the extra whatever.
The extra $18.
Yeah.
Extra $18 for every thousand taxable value in Dearborn Heights.
That's the formula.
And to be clear, the property you're assessing is the value of the land, I guess, but also the structures on it,
right.
But nothing inside of it necessarily, right?
He does that for
no personal property inside of the house.
No personal property. But right. Obviously you keep track.
That's how the taxes.
In terms of sales value, whether it's three bedrooms or two baths or whatever, that would change the value when it's sold, but...
We assess on building footprint.
Oh.
So it is. We take a measurement of the outside
square
of the
footage
and get the square footage
on
the footprint. And then whether or not it's one story, two story, you know, a bungalow, there's some variations on the rates. We use a cost manual.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Proposal A real quick.
Yes.
Proposal A established that principal residence exemption, and it created three values that we have to assess every year. Assessed value, which is half of the market value, the true mm-hmm. cash value of the house.
Mm-hmm.
A cap value, which is calculated every year, both values are. And then the taxable value, mainly. The taxable value is the lower value between the capped and assessed value.
Right.
And that is the value you're ultimately assessed on.
Now, explain something people would like to know. I've been 43 years in my house, and you told me I've reached my cap value. I've taken all. Explain how the cap value works with. If you've been in a place a long time and you've owned your home, you'll see that your taxes are a lot less than people that have been in their house. There's a formula that helps you and works in your favor.
Right. And the taxable value based on that cap value.
Let's use a number. Use a number of 50,000 for something so a person can see what the difference is.
Right. Okay.
Let's say your retail value is 100,000 and your which is 50,000, and show what is the cap value.
Okay, the cap value every year is calculated, and it is the prior year's taxable value minus physical losses to the property, like if you were to remove a shed. If you were to remove,
but it's not likely. Why would it?
It's very
likely. Why
does
it go down based on the years you've been there?
It's not.
My house is in
the only way it would go down is in a declining market, because then the assessed value would then become lower than the cap value,
which happened to all of us recently.
Right over the last 4 to 5 years. We were in a declining market, and
so is that all? Proposal A has to do with you.
Well, let me just jump in that for our listeners. My understanding is Proposal A in general applies to more than just home values, too.
Yes.
It's that the rate of taxation can't go up faster than a certain percentage each year.
Exactly.
And
that's what I was getting.
Dearborn,
limited
for example.
By 5%.
Yeah. Mayor O'Reilly in his State of the City address specifically, or in general anyway, he was saying, gee, we're really in trouble because property values are going up pretty good in Dearborn right now, but we can't get that money because Proposition A is holding us down.
Yeah, Proposal A will
Proposal
limit
A
it,
is holding it down.
The CPI or 5%, whichever is lower.
Yes, right. So he would like to see that, obviously, this Mayor O'Reilly, I'm quoting here his opinion, that he would like to see that done away with because
that was the Republican
it holds back
to prevent property taxes from going
This
that
was a situation.
The whole point of it.
Yeah, no one ever expected that there would be such a sudden downturn like 2008 in property values. And then when things jump back up, and I don't think it's come that up that fast for most people, but still Proposition A is holding back the funds that
Jay, you're absolutely right. What's happening to the communities? They can't recoup. They can't get it. Things are getting better,
right,
but we can't generate any
for a few years anyway. I mean, it'll take incremental increases,
value though is uncapped though the year after a transfer of ownership. So if I sell property to you, the next year, if I sold it to you in 2015, the next year in 2016, your taxable value would become the assessed value.
For the new person,
right, and then the cap would be based off that taxable value and recalculated.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to afford my own house if I was to buy it today.
Maybe.
Right.
I see. Okay.
Now, there's another interesting thing our listeners should know. Justin told me our consumer price index was only 1.6%.
Mm.
But according to Proposal A, we couldn't make it higher than 5%.
Proposition A.
If the consumer price index was bigger, we have to take the lesser number, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It cannot be higher than 5%. That's
now,
the greatest it can go up unless
this
you
is
add
important
or
when later
things.
You may want to ask me a question about the city's budget.
Okay.
Our budget has gone up 5.5%. So at our budget hearings, that's a question I'm going to ask.
Sure. Sure.
But and I brought the budget here in case so that you and I could discuss it later.
Right.
Now
that budget is not based solely off taxes.
No, because we get money from the state and we get money from tickets. But it's
what's the commercial property percentage in Dearborn Heights?
It'll be low.
How many commercial buildings do we have?
Well, I know Dearborn has probably many more, or at least Ford Motor Company is the lion's share of that kind of property. I know that personal property taxes are ended, which is the stuff inside the commercial buildings used to be taxed.
The governor took care of that.
Right. The they're starting a phase out from what we know.
And there's some way money's going to come back to the cities sort of to make up for that. I was never clear. I'm not sure anybody. But there are promises, I know, from the state legislature and the governor that they would make up for the loss of that.
I think it's going to come back in the $1 billion, how many down on this?
But I was just wondering how big the impact. I mean, in terms of the money that comes from property taxes into the city of Dearborn Heights, what percent comes from residential and what comes from
the majority that's residential. Okay. We have 21,000 parcels out of that are residential buildings, roughly, out of the 26,000 parcels, roughly, that we have in the city. So,
our commercial is very small and it's strip commercial. We don't have a Fairlane shopping center. Right. We don't
large corporation.
The whole Ford development. I mean, there's essentially the problems of bedroom communities. There is no downtown. It's the same problem for many of the bedroom communities.
So getting back to my point about the personal property tax being ended, that is for the stuff inside the commercial buildings being taxed, that's not as great a loss to Dearborn Heights as it certainly has been to Dearborn.
Exactly. Right. It's minimal. It's limited to, you're leasing a building, okay, so you're not paying the real property taxes on that building, the landlord is, and then you're running a business out of there. You were taxed before on your equipment to operate that business.
Sure. Computers,
now,
whatever.
If you're a small, Justin, there's a small us, taxpayer irrelevant. Exemption, and that exempts people that have $80,000 true cash to pay zero property taxes, but they have to file that exemption. If they don't file it, then they are taxed, and it has to be filed by February 10th every year, or they will be taxed even being exempt under the $80,000 true cash.
Okay, let's get back to... Jay's question is exactly right. That property tax thing killed Dearborn. It doesn't affect us as seriously, but Mayor O'Reilly was content from what the governor told him how they would be reconstituted. But I'm not sure.
In terms of ending the personal property tax, and I don't think there's any answer for Proposition A limitations on money that might be coming to the city. I mean, they can keep moving up in small increments if property values go up, as I understand it. But I know the city is going to be in a lot of trouble in a couple of years because they can't get the money that perhaps would be appropriately assessed if there wasn't those caps on it.
Proposal A works best, in an increasing market.
Right.
It was developed in... rode all along through the increasing market.
Sure.
The idea that property values were always increasing.
And we traded off a 4% sales tax for a 6% in order to get it.
Right, and that's why we're going on May 5th to that sales tax increase proposal on the ballots. Be sure to register and vote, people. You can still register if you haven't registered to vote. If you haven't voted before and you want to register to vote, all the way through Monday, April 6th, by the way, to be able to vote in May 5th. But that's one example of where any tax increases, major tax increases in the state, have to be approved by the public. And because they're certainly over any sort of proposition or Proposal A expectations.
Well, Justin, I don't know if we covered... We didn't cover exactly your assessment, what you do in the field.
What do you do every day? What do you do every day?
In the office, you do something, and in the field, you do. He's actually looking at all the properties. That's understandable. But let me ask you something. I got a person come up to me and say, I put a new microwave oven in my house, and somehow the assessor came by and said, you got a new microwave oven. I'm increasing the assessment of your house.
Well, that would be very minimal.
That's
very
ridiculous.
Minimal. It would be very minimal, but that is new. To the property.
What if I change the sliding doors in my house? They're 50 years old.
No, that would just be normal.
And I want to put insulated ones.
It would have to be something physically new to the property, like a deck, a patio, a shed, an addition to the house, adding a new bathroom in the basement that wasn't currently there, finishing the basement.
Now what does the office work entail? If you come back after your investigation, what is it you do in the office?
Well,
you record somebody else? Do you record all these changes? How does that work?
Well, the state wants us to kind of look at 20% of all the properties in every class.
Every year.
Every year. Hmm. You know, so after 5 years, in theory, we would have looked at every single property again in the city. Mm-hmm. We go out and we make sure that the record cards are correct for the property, that there's hasn't been any, like, transpositional
errors.
Okay,
what's on a record card?
On a record card, we measure the house. We start with measuring the house, taking pictures. We'll look at the quality of the house so that we can generate, you know, a base rate. Because what our ultimate goal is to generate replacement cost new and remove depreciation and adjust it to the market and localize it to our area. And that's so what we do.
Explain that in English.
Well, yeah. Let me get back to the math here. If it's 20% of the properties, and you said you had about 21,000 some out residential properties.
Right.
That's over 4,000 properties a year. That's just you?
No.
We have a staff.
Okay. All right.
It would be a lot of
properties. How many per day is that? Duh. 150 a day?
They probably can't meet it either. But.
We try to look at about 20 a day, 20 to 30, depending on the size of the house. We go out and look at new construction. If there's been a fire, we will drop the house down a percentage for being unlivable.
Building permits, of course.
Permits and sales, especially with the downturn market. We had a lot of very homes that were in poorer condition that were being sold.
How about the ones that got
flooded?
So
we had to verify that that's a good sale. You know, would you get the same price for a house that has been gutted by somebody than one that's ready to be moved into?
And sometimes people will sell at a relatively low price compared to market value just because they want to leave.
Right.
Or maybe there was a death in the family.
Estate
and
sales,
just being
that happens a lot,
liquidated.
Where they just want to liquidate the house.
You try to take that into adjustment or account.
Oh, right. So you think they're liquidating it less than it's...
Well, sometimes that happens.
If it's value.
If they're desperate to get rid of it.
I mean, if you're left a house by your mother, you know, and you're just trying to get it off your hands, you and your siblings, you may take a lower price. You may not be holding out for the best offer on the market.
Okay,
with
and that affects...
That's not necessarily always true, but it does happen quite a bit where, you know, the first offer that comes along, they all agree on it and split it, you know, four ways. But.
Okay, let's talk about the review process. The average person knows something about that.
The Board of Review?
Yeah.
After
explain, it's about 3 days in the month of March, somewhere in the beginning.
Well, there are requirements.
And what do you have to do when you don't like the tax you've been assessed?
There are city requirements, charter requirements, and state requirements in the General Property Tax Act as to whether you have to do a certain amount of days, some time at night, so that everybody's able to come. When they come to the Board of Review, they're going to present their case on why they think the house is overassessed. They'll present whatever evidence they have, and then the board
will
make
a
decision.
What do? You read him the Riot Act
we don't
at 1.6%, and you tell him.
Well, we don't do anything.
Didn't go
with
up
the board.
More than 1%.
The board is independent of the assessor's office, so we are not telling them to do anything.
I mean,
the board
is
making
the board
their own informed. The board's making their own informed decision.
Okay, so they're quasi independent.
Correct. They're appointed
by the
mayor? Council.
By the city council.
And we try to find people with a background in real estate. They have to be taxpayers of the city.
So they might specifically disagree with, let's say, whether or not that brick pile in the backyard is a patio or not. But they can't go too far from the criteria that you're supposed to apply. I mean, they can't just go crazy. That review board, can they? And say,
no,
Joe's a good friend and his house shouldn't be that much.
They can't do that. They have to follow the law. They cannot make across-the-board changes. They have to look at each parcel specifically and independently to see if it
falls
in. And
then qualifying sales of the same similar kind of thing in the similar name. That's the only approach you can take. You got to go to them and say...
Well, for residential, you have to go there first. Residential, agricultural.
Yeah.
Then you can appeal to the Michigan Tax Tribunal.
Right.
Commercial
explain that. You don't like the decision.
Exactly.
You got to go downtown and appeal, and you get who do you get there?
If the board lowers it, if they leave it the same, or they can even increase it. So they can do one of three things to
and
the
you
property.
You don't like it.
If you don't like it, if they've decreased it, they don't think they've decreased enough, you have to go then and appeal to the Michigan Tax Tribunal.
And what does that take?
And that takes going on, I believe, now to their website and filing an online petition with Michigan.gov/taxtrib.
What's the percentage of people being successful there? Is it kind of like a lost cause?
I would say not.
Okay.
I don't have a percentage. It comes down to the evidence, who has the best supporting evidence as to the value of the house. Because value is an opinion. It's always an opinion. Value is not an exact science. You may think your house is worth $100,000. I may think it's worth $150,000. So they kind of sit, you know,
okay,
be the intermediary.
Let me
and look at both sets of evidence to see what is the best.
Because this has happened. The house next door to me sells for $200,000, but when it came tax time, you didn't value his house at $200,000 or half of $200,000. You didn't take the actual sales value because that should be an indication of its value.
That is.
You still went and related it to other sales.
That's actually illegal. We're not allowed to do that. It's called following sales.
Hmm.
The sale price of a property is not the assessed value of the property.
Well, that's interesting news.
You don't automatically set it at half. We have to look at the whole neighborhood. We have to look at all the sales that are going on in the neighborhood and then make a market adjustment based on, you know, a statistical analysis of the neighborhood.
You just came to my house today. Yeah. I live in the nice neighborhood, but probably the smallest house where there are a lot of bigger houses. Is that beneficial to my sales value? Or are my taxes going up inappropriately?
Oh, we're kind of jumping around a little bit. Your house is valued, each house is valued with the cost manual that the State Tax Commission has developed and adopted.
Cost and based on today's construction?
It's basically a cost estimation manual.
Okay.
And then we adjust it based on the area and the state of Michigan that you live in.
And the reason why I asked this question, so the listener says, well, this guy built this monster house across the street from me. It's worth $200,000 more than I think my house. Is this a curse to me or what? That's why I
mean,
I
that
asked
would.
The question.
I would say that would, if everybody in the neighborhood built a house that size all around you and you were the last one to hold out there, then that would increase the value of your property because somebody would want to come and buy that lot and
put
the last house there. So, yeah, and you would probably get a nice.
I'm sure a day is going to come.
Or demolish
house.
Your house.
I mean, you don't
want
to be
the lot. They don't want.
Yeah. You don't want to be the best and biggest home on the block.
No.
Hmm. And you don't want to be the worst. You know, you want to fall in the middle there. But as those larger homes are going up around you, they can bring up your property value. They don't necessarily do that because we look at those homes most often in comparison with other homes similar to that.
Okay.
We're not going to compare.
Jay, you got an interesting question.
Well, just the old bugaboo is what about, and you said it's certainly a value is an opinion, and there's all kinds of different rationale, but which one is more important to one person would vary to another person. But there are some state criteria you mentioned. What about houses that are stylistically different? Somebody puts up a house that's a Chinese pagoda, if it follows the city code.
That's a good question. And the state has their manuals that we use on the website. Anybody can go and look at this.
Yeah, we don't have an architectural commission. I know they do in Dearborn.
Well, we have a lot of historical districts that have a lot of guidelines.
That house, you know, there's a class system that we follow. Hmm. And based on the class A, B, BC, C, CD, and D, there's different rates for every style of house within that cost manual.
Hmm.
So like an A home may be that architect, one-of-a-kind designed home where you're not going to see it again. It was specifically designed for an individual.
That's a category.
That's a category A. And it would
A for architects. Okay. Or whatever. Yes. It doesn't fit in with other categories. Like let's say somebody decides to put an A-frame like mountain thing, you know, where they build them on mountainsides where there's a lot of snow for skiers, that kind of house. That wouldn't fit in Dearborn if it was allowed even, and I know probably wouldn't be in most places. But as I said, I live, for example, in a historic district, and absolutely it has to be this sort of Cape Cod style that's all identified by agreement with everybody that's been in the neighborhood before, and the city has said, yes, we will allow you to make your own decisions on that. And so it's extremely consistent. All of our windows have to have those little crossbars in the windows.
Mutton bars.
Okay, yeah. Whether or not the window is actually that way, they have to get it. If they get the new windows that are solid pieces of glass, they still have to get that little design touch on the outside to make it look like they've got all those little crossbars every 8 inches or so.
Yeah, that's because they couldn't make big pieces of glass, and it was harder to ship if it's big. They used small.
Well, I know the smaller paints make it look a little bit older, more historic value, and whatever.
Well, we just go out and assess it after.
We don't have anything like that in Dearborn Heights, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We have a problem of people, and I keep thinking about working on some ordinances that, you can't put monster two-story houses on the street where they're all 900 square foot bungalows that don't have basements and are on the ground, and the first level is 4 feet off the ground, so they have a 10-foot basement.
Well, I hadn't heard of that one. But
we have that problem.
That's not probably an assessment issue. It's just an architectural style issue for the city.
Well, we need to put it in our zoning ordinance that if you're in a one-story neighborhood, I don't care if you buy three lots, you have to build a one-story house.
And I think it's off the question from assessment, but, for example, Dearborn, we went through the last 2 years. Finally, the city council in Dearborn has regulations now in place that you can't make your garage like a living space, okay? You can't change the front garage door to sliding panels or something.
We need to adopt that.
And you might be able to have a small kitchen in there, though, but you can't do things that make it look like it's a living space or a social space. That would be against the guidelines. Some people think it lowers property values. Other people don't. But it just became something where the city council had to make a ruling about that. Now they're allowed to give tickets and fines to people that don't have the standard fold-down garage doors.
Yeah, we have actually the same problem, but we haven't acted upon it. It's really, the garages are not built to be living spaces.
Well, no, there's a lot of health and safety problems.
Right, we haven't addressed it. Now, that brings us to my last station ID, which I'd like to do to make sure our listeners know what on earth we're talking about and who's doing the talking. You are listening to the Heights News and Views, a talk show program presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month right here on 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford College radio station, broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan, from those of you listening around the world. You can re-listen to this archive program on the internet on your computer and by selecting whfr.fm to get to our station site. Select the talk show button and then select the today's date, which today is March 31st, or any other date of the fifth Tuesday to listen to our program. The time is, of course, 1 to 2 p.m. And the show title, again, is The Heights News and Views. Now, back to our guest for today, Dearborn Heights City Appraiser. He's going to be someday, Justin Probilski. I think, Jay, that pretty much covers what we want to talk about. I know you wanted to ask me some questions about what's going on in the city.
Right. Before we finish up with Justin, though, what's the, just some general thing, what's the toughest part of your job, or what do you get the most questions about other than just, why did you assess my property either that high or that low?
I think the toughest part is really people don't understand what we do. They think that we were just, sometimes
throwing
a number on something. So there is a process and there is laws that we have to follow, and we try to create the most fair and equitable assessments, and if you ever have a question about your assessment or a process, don't hesitate to come down and see us, and we'll try to help you explain that to you and clarify any questions you may have.
Now, the city of Dearborn Heights is still just 4 days a week, right?
Yes.
I'm just saying, come down, but not on Fridays.
So. Not on Friday.
Okay.
Not on
Friday. All right.
Actually, I'm going to tell a little story that's interesting. I had a friend that quite stumbled onto assessing when he was in college and responded to a job for a community pretty much like yours, and learned what assessing is all about. And eventually, not knowing where he was going in life at all, ended up working for, in his case, the Kmart Corporation, where he became like the attorney fighting tax assessments for the Kmart Corporation around the country.
Yeah, when you talk
so
to
there's
most
other openings with this. Once you learn how to do this, it's not a municipal job that you can get, but you might be out for a major corporation arguing for their tax assessments
to
be reduced.
Ford, most specifically, has a
huge
property
team.
Tax and assessment division where they're appealing them. And
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I've heard they have 50 lawyers full-time, but I'm not sure how much they do assessment. But I bet a lot of them are doing assessment.
They mostly would do an appeal, you know, on any...
Well, I think if you have money enough to hire that many lawyers or experts on assessment, that your ongoing need is to challenge, that is, try to find equity or fairness in all these assessments, whatever your properties are taxed at. You have the resources, which the average person doesn't. I'm sorry, a little opinion expressed here. Remember, all opinions on the WHFR talk shows are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford College. But it's certainly true that if you have the resources from profits from your corporate operation, you can hire people that basically challenge, I mean, towards equity and fairness, of course, but you can challenge all the time.
Right.
These rulings.
Actually, my particular friend, after he actually left the corporate world and started a business of doing exactly this with another individual and provided this as a service for people, and their fee would be what they saved you in one taxable year. Mm-hmm. In other words, if they saved you $5,000 in this taxable year, your tax went from $20,000 to $15,000. That was their fee.
I'm sure.
So those of you listening that want to get a little ahead of yourself, start thinking about working in the assessor's office, taking these courses that Justin is doing. So the end of the rainbow was not necessarily being assessor at Dearborn Heights, but other things can open up to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everybody that's in assessing never wanted to go into it. It's not something that, you know, you really know about, want to get into.
Well, this
everybody
guy
just kind of
stumbled
falls
into it.
Right,
this
everybody
guy
kind
stumbled
of falls
didn't,
into it.
Didn't
it's, really. It's a job that has to be done, but on the upside, you need people, as you said, the independent assessors or lawyers or whatever that specialize in this to also, when needed, come in and try to give balance to the situation. In the few minutes we have left in the show, and Justin, you can jump in here too if you have an opinion, but about the sales tax increase proposal coming up May 5th, how is that going to benefit Dearborn Heights, Ned? Now, some of the money, I know there's road repairs, okay, but let's not forget, there's some going to the schools, but I understand there's actually, and there's some going, of course, to Metro Transit needs that I'm aware of. But some money is going to be going back to the cities, more or less, directly. I'm not sure exactly what or how much, for example. Do you know anything about what Dearborn Heights is going
to
get?
Well, if you notice, I gave you a chart. I happened to go to a SEMCOG meeting the other day, and they do pass out a lot of information, and this one caught my eye, which I gave you. It outlines exactly what everybody's getting, each city. And if you notice, the big amounts, like $59 million, are for Wayne County.
This is for road funding, though. Yeah,
yeah, but you look at the categories, it breaks down how much you're getting. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I get tongue-tied. We get from the state subsidies that come about from the fact that the cities gave up their city taxes individually. That's how come we get a statutory and a constitutional money back from the state. I forget exactly what we call it.
Okay, so it looks
so
like
it'll show you how much we're going to get.
So in terms of
more
fixing the roads, if the sales tax passes, theoretically Dearborn, instead of getting about, it's hard to believe, but
you'll see them both on top.
$6.5 million for Dearborn is going to be up to $10.8 million.
It's going to show you the difference.
And Dearborn Heights is going to go from about $33.4 million to almost $5.6 million.
Right.
And I guess you have to use those to fix your local roads.
That's what it's for.
But I thought there was some other money. Other money. Okay.
Well, whatever it is, there. Unless
other than roads repairs, I thought there was some other.
Well, you're all getting school money too. All that.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, but that doesn't go into the city's coffers directly. Just the schools get that directly.
Well, yeah. We don't have anything to do with schools. But right. the point is,
all right.
The present sales tax, there is a percentage of that that what the schools were getting.
Mm-hmm.
This money, they're not going to get that anymore from this gas tax.
Right.
That's being eliminated. And because it's eliminated, their schools are getting money from this sales tax increase. Mm-hmm. And the reason I know that is 2 weeks ago, I went to Architects and Engineers Legislative Day in Lansing, and the governor's top representative in selling this was telling us that's why there's educational money in this sales tax thing,
mm-hmm.
because it's coming out of the gas tax. So they're being compensated.
Yeah, everybody's getting a little part of that, right. that tax. Not everybody, but the four or five major areas that we mentioned, in addition to fixing the roads in general in the state. There's a question, of course, whether or not the money is going to be enough to really fix the roads.
I don't think $1 billion. What is it, $1.2 or $1.3 billion? I can't.
Governor Snyder himself a couple of years ago said we need $1.2 billion for 10 years to get us back up to just a maintenance level, because we've got a lot of roads and bridges that need to be completely redone, as well as small repairs on top of that.
Well, just being an amateur,
but the cost seems to have gone up.
I would say $1 billion is not enough money.
No, because some people are saying that the roads and bridges are in such bad condition now because of no repair, big repairs the last couple of years. It really needs about $1.7 billion or $1.8 billion for 10 years to catch up. And then I read today from a conservative think tank source saying that we borrowed money at the state of Michigan to fix the roads over the last 10 years. We're still paying interest and principal on some of the loans we took out 10 years ago. So their idea was, well, let's use a big chunk of this new money, if approved,
and pay the bond off.
Pay the loans off from the past. But of course, that means that the road repairs are going to have to wait a while too. But we're paying tremendous interest, apparently, that I wasn't aware of, on the bonds or whatever loans it is that they were using to fix some roads in the past. So it's kind of messed up, however you look at it. But my only point here, because we try to stay with Dearborn Heights issues or Dearborn Heights and Dearborn, is, I mean, I'm still questioning, why did Mayor O'Reilly, who is going to be on my show in 2 weeks,
on April 17th.
Well, no, I get him the whole hour, Ned. I'm sorry.
No, but I mean, he changed his mind.
Right, he did change his mind on this. And, of course, April 17th still gives people a couple weeks to decide how they're going to vote on this. He apparently now is supporting a yes vote because he thinks it'll be good for Dearborn. Maybe because the schools will be helped. Somewhat.
The Dearborn schools don't need any help. They're going to get the $6 million for their...
Well, they're getting... the city is getting this extra money for the roads, looks like there. But he thinks that, you know, any money coming in from any source, I understand, it's going to be better than not having that money coming in. But a lot of people have more basic questions, like even how are roads being built?
I got an opinion about that. I think we do a stupid thing.
Do you take the lowest bid in Dearborn Heights when you do local city roads there? Don't you have some criteria about the quality of work or something?
To tell you the truth, I'm not sure of that. I know one thing. I'm talking about the major roads. We don't design a road the last 40 years. We need to do what the Germans do. They build a road to make it the last. We build a road the last 20 years. They build one last 40.
Well, I think
it's a lot cheaper to do it right the first time than repeat it 20 years later.
Some Michigan roads seem in pretty bad shape after 5 years. People have been criticizing that it seems to go to low bids only. But how are your residential streets in Dearborn Heights? You're in a nice neighborhood, so you have many potholes?
My neighborhood just recently got repaved.
Well, that's special. Does that
affect the assessment, Justin? It's part of...
Oh, darn.
That wouldn't
there's a
the
local roads program.
Yeah.
There's a local roads program, and there's a what they call highway, which is a little misleading to me. It's probably major roads that are separate from the local roads. I want to bring our DPW guy here for...
I mean, I'll obviously ask Mayor O'Reilly about... because his street, he lives on Park Street in West Dearborn. Boy, did they have the potholes. So he can't say they're just fixing... Mayor O'Reilly's residential street. You know, it's not true. We've and military, and I think, I'm not sure about military, how much that is. It's always a question, what is county roads and what are state roads and what are city roads? But
what happens is the county has contracts with the state to take care of their roads in their district in the county.
Oh, okay, because they got the trucks and the people.
The state gives them the money to take care of some of their business. Oh. They may be state junction roads, but the county's taking care of
them. I know Dearborn has some DPW guys that come around with a truck full of hot asphalt that they shovel out into a couple little potholes.
That is the dumbest thing we do.
Yeah, I think.
You know, the Germans, when they repair the Autobahn, you can't tell the difference where they did the repair.
Right.
Well, all I know is that Mayor Poletko and he were against this thing, and I saw the mayor yesterday, and he's still against it.
He's against the sales tax increase proposal.
I only have one problem with it. I ran for state rep last year, and I got many questions on what's the answer to fixing the roads. Mm-hmm. And I believe in fairness. There's no question all of us are going to have to pay something, because one way or another, even if you don't drive a car and don't have a license or don't have a license plate, you benefit from the roads. But a 17% tax increase is what they're talking about. When you add one penny from 6% to 7%, that's a 17% tax increase.
How is that figured?
Just do the math. That's how you do it. And a 17% tax increase is for the poorest guy that doesn't even pay state tax and doesn't even pay federal tax, has to pay that.
Oh, because of average driving.
Whatever.
Okay. Right. Now, the solution is... His budget more. Okay.
Absolutely. It's not fair.
Okay.
You have to get the money from the asphalt providers, concrete...
The fairest approach, it's true, would be increasing gas tax.
That has to be done, too, but the license plates, the fees... Mm-hmm. The purchase of tires, there should be an excess tax.
Limiting the heavy truck access to Michigan roads.
Everybody, it shouldn't be the same. Yeah. For the Fruithof Corporation should be different for General Motors and them than it is for Charlie that doesn't drive.
But it's a political...
But he buys groceries.
It's politicized with various kinds of philosophies that are mixed in to the Democratic and Republican Party, unfortunately, and they don't get along with each other, so we're going to have to deal with that. But you get along real well in Dearborn Heights, don't you, folks?
Well, originally...
You never have problems, except on Fridays, because then there's nobody around, but just bad joke. Okay, Ned, you've got to say the conclusion and thank our guest, and we got to move on.
I gave my conclusion to you, so give it back to me, and I'd be happy
excuse
to
me.
Read it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to start the theme music underneath. Go ahead.
You have been listening to the Heights News and Views, presented on the fifth Tuesday of every month on WHFR Dearborn, making waves on 89.3 FM. This program is devoted on issues of interest to the residents of Dearborn Heights, presented from 1 until 2 p.m. right here from the campus of the Henry Ford College on 89.3. See you next time.
We are your pets, and this song's dedicated to those people.
It's WHFR's 30th Anniversary Gala. April 18th at Park Place Banquet Hall at Outer Drive and Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. The gala is from 6 to 11 p.m.